Hey everyone, John Worth. I'm here at a special edition Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. Jamie Lasanti filled in so capably yesterday, but we have some breaking news in the interim, which is that the Davis Cup proposal, the revamped World Cup type format, that passed by 71%+, no less. And we will bring in Dave Hegarty, head of the ITF, and really the man who didn't just spearhead this, but staked his entire position on this single issue. Big win for him, and this is a big move for tennis, a sport that doesn't always do change so gracefully. This is big. So we bring in Dave Hegarty to talk a little bit more about this historic day. Dave, I'll start by saying congrats. I'm wondering if you feel like Kevin Anderson after the Wimbledon semis. This was hard earned.
Well, certainly a satisfying feeling for the team after working very hard on a project that everybody believed in. So it's great satisfaction, and now the hard work begins. We've got to deliver as we promised, and we will.
You said this was a project everyone believes in. Define everyone.
No, what I said is it's a project that the team that worked on it certainly believed in very much. But we had a very good outcome. 71% of the nations voted in favor of the reforms. So it's a great start. And now we have to work with all the stakeholders in tennis to make sure that the Davis Cup outcome is exactly as we expect.
I likened you yesterday to a political leader pushing through a controversial bill that there was a lot of lobbying and a lot of debate. This was, you know, we spoke 6 months ago. When you look back, what were the plot points? I mean, what were sort of the biggest critical moments in the course of this?
Well, I think what we learned through the process was that we needed to continue to talk to our stakeholders with the nations, because, you know, change is sometimes a difficult thing in the tennis world for anyone to want to take that step to make a significant change. So by meeting with the nations many times, going to regional meetings, and we had it during Roland Garros and during Wimbledon sessions with the nations, presentations to update and answer questions. But it's just making sure that the nations had all the information they needed to make an informed decision. So I think that the turning point was probably in Roland Garros, when we unveiled more information, where we announced that it was the home and away round. I think that was quite a big turn for the nations to give them the security that they had their tradition with some innovation as well.
From where I sit, one of the critical turns was moving this to Europe, where the sports nerve center is really located, and taking it out of Asia. I think that made it a lot more feasible in terms of fans, in terms of travel, in terms of time zones. When we spoke at Indian Wells, this was going to be held most likely, I think you said, in Singapore. How did it come about that now we're looking at a site in Madrid or France, which, again, from where I sit, makes a lot more sense?
Sure. Well, again, I think it came down to listening to players, listening to the nations as well. And we know that many of the, you know, of the top 18 nations that will be competing in this through the 30 teams that play off, there are going to be quite a few teams from Europe. The last winners for the last few years have been from, you know, over the last 10 years, many from Europe. So I think it was in consultation, knowing that that this will follow the London finals. The players are in Europe. They're playing on indoor surfaces. So we wanted to make it easier for the players. And then in future years, we can look at moving to other locations. And when you and I were together in Indian Wells, we laughed and said, boy, wouldn't this be a great location?
Right.
And sure enough, you know, Larry Ellison has become an investor and very involved in this. And certainly there are possibilities in the future for Indian Wells to be a great sort of host site as well.
What guarantees are you providing that these financial commitments will be met?
Well, we have a couple of years of rolling bank guarantees that were put in place. It was very important to the board and to the nations that we have the security that is needed, and all that is in place. And with our investors, you know, with Larry Ellison, with the Cosmos Group and CMC and Sequoia, they certainly have the wherewithal financially to be able to support the business plan that's in place to make this a success.
Give us a little more sense of how this money's going to be distributed. I mean, I think people have seized on almost abstractly large number, but I think the other number people have seized on is $25 million a year to member federations for development. For a lot of countries,
yes,
that is really significant. I mean, in some cases, that's three and four times what the current intake is. But how does that get distributed? I mean, does the USTA get the same distribution as the, pick a country, the Thai Federation? How's this going to work?
Well, the money's going to be distributed in a couple of different ways. One is that there will be money paid to the nations for their Davis Cup performance. And so it'll be based on which group they're in. So for instance, at the lowest group level, three and four nations will now earn $25,000 as a minimum, compared to a very small amount that they would receive today of
$25 million.
So
$25 million, right?
That's significant for them. And then we also will be putting money into development, which will touch all 200 nations. And again, some of the larger nations like the United States that don't need as much support won't be accessing that development money, but the other nations that do need that support will. And also we'll be putting a significant investment into FedCup as well to increase the distribution of money to nations. And the nations are really the only, the nations in the ITF are the only body that works on developing tennis. So together through the nations, they coach their juniors at a young age. They put on junior tennis tournaments that don't make money, that they invest in their players' futures to help them make the pathway to the professionals more possible. So a lot of that money will now go back into that future development, which is something we do that the ATP doesn't do, as an example. So that's why it's so important for the future of tennis.
With Davis Cup now having a working model, does the attention turn to Fed Cup and replicating this for the women?
Yes, it absolutely does. And in fact, I had a conversation with Brian was at the other day. We had a chance to begin our discussions about what we can do with Fed Cup and working with the WTA to do the best thing for women's tennis. So it's certainly a big focus for us. And the plan is to replicate in some form or fashion, maybe not exactly identically, but to work towards something like this model to introduce for 2020.
I credit Chris Clary for this statistic, which has been trafficked a lot lately. But when France won last year, I'm sure you know, they did not have to beat a top 40 player. That's illustrative of player participation. What sort of goals do you have? I mean, how many top players would you like to see at the event for this to be a success?
Well, ideally, we want to have the Davis Cup model be a successful event. We'd love to have participation like you have in a Grand Slam event. We'd love all the top players to be playing, and I think that's our ambition. That's our goal. So we will work hard with the top players and the top nations on the selection. We know from the players that one of the biggest challenges was that they believe that they can't take 4 weeks out of their schedule to play a nation's competition every year. And this allows them in 1 week or in 2 weeks to be able to represent their country, wear their uniform and their nation's colors, carry the flag. And now with the significant increase in prize money of $20 million, it's a Grand Slam-like payoff for the nations and for the players. So we think that these elements will be a big improvement.
Do you feel like there's an element of politicking and damage control and maybe some reassurances you need to be giving at the U.S. Open? I mean, it strikes me you probably still have some work cut out for you these next few weeks.
Oh, absolutely. I think that yesterday at the conclusion of our meeting, I talked about unity in the family. In many areas, 51% is all you need. In our case, we needed 2/3, and we had 71%. And what I want to do is make sure that the nations come along with us, and that those nations that may have been opposed to it are going to be supporting it. And I was very happy to see after the meeting that a number of the larger, you know, the nations that didn't vote in favor came up and said, look, we will support this. We will do everything we can. Davis Cup is our, you know, nation's event. It's very important to us, and you have our support. Let's work together. So that was very, very positive.
I'm watching.
And we'll do the same thing. Reach out to the other stakeholders and make sure that everyone understands what we're doing and tennis can get behind us.
What was your response? I mean, I think players have come out. I think all over the map, but there's been some voice of opposition. I think Andy Murray had an interesting point, which was, let's try this, and we're all open to ideas, but let's leave open the door that we could revert to the old format if this doesn't work. What was your response to that? Why not try this fairly radical change for a few years, see if it works, and then reassess?
Well, I think it's like any other change. You have to make it successful. And I think that with our plans and our vision of what we want to do, we will make it an event that the players will want to play in, that they'll enjoy coming to, that they'll feel good about playing in each year. It's up to us to make that a success. I think the players for a number of years have been saying we want Davis Cup to change, and that you know they felt that we weren't listening, and now we have the mandate with the change, and I think the players will give us that opportunity to show them how great this new event will be.
Dave, I'm watching your readout on our audio board here in the studio, and you speak in very measured tones. Your voice is not soaring or falling. You keep a measured presence, and I'm wondering, this was a real political battle. Again, you are speaking calmly, and people who know you do not see you as a look-at-me kind of guy, but this was a lot of negotiating and a lot of navigating. What political skills, what personal skills did you rely on to pass us through? I think people need to know what a really, it's sometimes vicious, but what a really involved, protracted battle this was.
Well, what I can say is I think that at the end of the day, a person is a person that, you know, and you're believed on what you do and your history and your past. And you have to be honest. You have to be as transparent as possible. And you have to build a consensus as best you can. So I think I am a fairly calm person. And I think that at times, this became very political. And I think there were people that truly believed that the tradition of what we have was what they wanted. And that was, some people. And there were some nations, I think, that it was a bit of a political battle looking to the future and the ITF leadership. And to me, that's the wrong thing. So, but it's dealing with people with respect, hearing their ideas, and trying to work with them to help them understand what you're doing, and also to listen to them, because you'll pick up some very good ideas. And we did along the way and make some modifications in our formula.
At some level, this isn't necessarily your problem, but I do wonder if you think tennis can still accommodate another world team event a few weeks later, obviously this ATP event with Tennis Australia. Do you think tennis can accommodate Davis Cup and a second event a few weeks later? Is there room for both?
I know that Davis Cup, with its history of 118 years, has a really strong platform for success and for continued growth under this new format that we'll have. So we feel good about that. I think that it'll be up to the players to decide about the other competition. I think that Chris Kommode has said that it's a bit insane to have two events that close. I will be reaching out and to the ATP to have discussions, because I think we need to work together for tennis, and to have them positive and involved in what we're doing as well. So, that's part of my plan.
I know you have to run. I want to point out, we can't even decide whether a tennis ball is green or yellow. So the fact that you were able to garner 71% of the votes is significant. This I suspect this is very gratifying for you both personally, but also you staked your position on this issue, didn't you?
Well, I think it's important to always be a leader. In my role, I have to lead. I have to believe in what I do, and I did. And the great thing was I had a very supportive board. We had unanimous decisions here in Orlando, and I think that with the Davis Cup Committee's support is really what carried the day and helped convince the nations. How do you go against what your committees that you've appointed and the board that you've selected? If they think this is the best and they've done the due diligence, it's time to move forward. And I think at the end of the day, that was the compelling reason for the support of the nations.
You've been in tennis an awful long time. Finally, what did you learn about the sport spending the last year on this one issue?
Well, I tell you that my tennis training has helped me and kicked in. So in January, I started to get back into shape, walking, doing activity, losing weight. It was almost as if I was preparing for a tournament, a big tournament for me, which wouldn't be too big for most people. So I think that what I've learned is that you have to really work with people. You have to be honest. You have to listen to what their concerns are, but you also have to put across the points that are important and the reasons for change. This was a big moment for the ITF to make a decision to make such a significant change. This is a historic moment for our organization, 105-year-old organization making a significant change like this. And I think it's because we worked together and the nations understood the importance and also working with our other stakeholders to make sure that we are putting tennis in a better place through these decisions that we make.
We have not finished play in Cincinnati, but we already have a big winner in tennis this week. Dave, congrats.
Thanks very much, John. Take care.
You too. See you at the Open. All right, that does it for this special edition podcast. Dave Hegarty, thanks for his time. Busy week, big week for him. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Jamie Lasanti, who did such a nice job on yesterday's podcast. Well done, Jamie. But let's talk a little Davis Cup. Top line thoughts you have?
Thank you. First of all, this was a good, I'm glad Dave was able to come on. This, we talked about it before. This has divided the tennis world. Everyone is freaking out. So it was good to hear from him. And he addressed a lot of the questions I think people had, especially about Fed Cup. I think that was an important one.
I do think we could do, I do think the next step in this is to involve women's tennis as well and do this jointly. A lot of questions here still. I mean, I think he answered the financing question, which is one question I've heard again and again, that the numbers just don't make sense. And there's a history in tennis of deals that have basically fallen apart. And tennis was left to scramble when financing didn't work. He seemed very confident about that. I mean, there are a lot of questions here, but I think the one thing we should not lose sight of is the disrepair and the sorry state of Davis Cup. I mean, we keep throwing around the statistic that France won Davis Cup last year and didn't have to face a top 40 opponent the entire way.
One of the things that I thought is really good, and you guys talked about this, was that when we first talked to him before this was passed, we were kind of baffled at the idea that this would take place in Asia. So I think
that's critical.
It was a good step forward that there will be a European location centrally, like as you said, located in 2019. I think that's really important. I think it will be good for the fans. And I don't know, the home and away is where I'm a little divided. I think it's a good thing. We still have home ties, just not as many of them. So it'll be interesting to see. What are your thoughts?
I think there's a lot going on here. I mean, I think some of this, I don't really buy the tradition argument, right? I mean, wooden rackets persisted for a long time too, and now...
Right. It doesn't discredit that they were, great right. then.
118 years. Well, times change, and the demands of tennis in this case have changed a lot. I think the location was critical. One thing we didn't talk about was Davis Cup was basically being used as a cudgel to get players to participate in order to have Olympic eligibility. The Olympics have really risen in tennis as a priority for players. And a lot of times, you know, the Williams sisters playing Fed Cup, they don't want to be going to, you know, Kokomo, Indiana to play. This was just done so they would have Olympic eligibility. So I think that this format recognizes that. I mean, I wish we talked a little bit more about the sort of overlap between Olympics and Davis Cup. But I think that the location is absolutely critical. I think the fact that players know, A, where it's going to be. I mean, there were all sorts of issues before. The U.S. would win, and you'd wait for the other result, and it could be home if Slovenia wins.
Right, how do you
wins,
plan your schedule?
How do you book an arena? How do you plan your schedule? The surface, all of that we're going to know in advance. I think having it in Europe is critical from a fan's perspective. If you really love the Italian team, yeah, you'll go to Madrid. You'll go to Lille.
Right.
You ain't going to Singapore. And I think for the players, if the goal here is to get the top players to participate, right? So the current model, unsustainable. You're not, Novak Djokovic is not going to play four times a year, best of five matches, uncertain travel locations, uncertain surfaces.
They've That's been inconsistent.
It's just not a reasonable expectation. This is much different. I think the fact that the top players, a lot of them will be coming from the ATP year-end event. So they'll be, even if, you know, Del Potro or Nishikori, Nick Kyrgios likely will be in Europe anyway. And the other players, it's an hour flight. So I think that's critical. And I do think it's interesting to note where the support came from, that there were a lot of countries that were fairly vocal in their opposition. Tennis Australia, which was completely conflicted, which had basically made its bet with the ATP and had a complete conflict of interest, not surprisingly, opposed this. The LTA, England opposed this as well. But I think what needs to be said, these 71% of the countries that voted for this, a lot of these were smaller countries, a lot of African countries and some of the Latin American countries. So when we talk about home and away, they're, in theory, the big beneficiary of those. And the fact that they were willing to say, listen, we're going to change the format in order to boost our revenues, $25 million. And I think Dave misspoke. Let's be clear, $25 million, not $25,000. $25 million, if you are... pick a country here. If you're the Ecuadorian Federation, that's a significant upgrade. So, you know, I think the other point, to the Andy Murray point, and I wish Dave had spoken a little bit more about this, you're not going to get this kind of sponsorship if you go in just dipping your toe in the water saying, hey, let's try this 2 years, we might go back. You're not going to have that kind of financial commitment from a backer. You need to be all in.
Right.
So this is big. And I think that, look, we don't know how this is going to go. We don't know. You know, Roger Federer is going to be 38 years old when this is held for the first time. We don't know what kind of players are going to play. But we talk in tennis about the need to change and innovate and update. And if you're not growing, you're failing. And if you don't like change, you're going to hate irrelevance. Well, this is going to be a big case study. The other thing that occurs to me to point out is that when tennis has embraced change, so Hawkeye, fairly radical, in the grand scheme of things, you could laugh, but having a tiebreaker, that was a big change. I don't see a whole lot of irreversible missteps, right? I mean, in retrospect, there's some marketing campaigns you do over. The ISL deal from the year 2000, which was going to package the Masters events, that completely collapsed. But I haven't seen a whole lot of irreversibly bad changes. And when tennis has taken big bets, again, Hawkeye is probably the most recent example, it's been a success. So it's easy to get sentimental. I think this went from an abstract discussion, hey, how do we change Davis Cup, to something that suddenly, when it became concrete, then there was all sorts of pining for the old days and all sorts of trepidation. But where were those voices when we were trying to get Davis Cup to be relevant, trying to get top players to play? I think when it went from theoretical to something very concrete, people said, holy shit, this is actually going to happen. That's where a lot of the objections came.
I think that with this, the one important point is that it's not guaranteed that this is going to be successful. But I think that, like, it is a risk, but I think the risk of Davis Cup in the old format just sort of, like, fizzling out and dying because there is no change is a greater risk than kind of getting ahead of it and saying, let's make a change. As you said, it may feel radical. It may feel wrong right now. It may feel like we're, you know... What did someone say? It was a death sentence to Davis Cup. But I think there seems to be a lot of upsides. I'm curious to see whether the top players will support it. Do you think that they will? I mean, a lot of the discussion around this has been about the big four plus, you know, one or two. Do you think that they will support it?
I think they will. And I think that there will be sponsor pressure, federation pressure. Ideally, it wouldn't come at the end of the year when the top players are rightly exhausted. But I think they almost owe it to I think we all need to see how this goes the first time. And I think the first year will be interesting to see. But I do think the first year will draw most of the top eligible players. I want to ask you a question. Because I love, you know, you are a lovely colleague. You're a terrific producer. But I also, I think people should know this about you, too. I think you're a great case study for someone who, 5 years ago, you want to tell everyone what your knowledge of tennis was?
I was going to say this to you. I think I represent a weird sign where, like, I probably am too much of a tennis nerd sometimes, where, like, I can fall into that trap of talking about tennis with people who don't really watch tennis that often, and they're like, what are you talking about, you know? Because I was not into tennis, did not follow the sport nearly as closely as I do now, and have really, like, turned into a tennis fanatic from being just, like, a mainstream sports fan. I mean, I grew up playing soccer, grew up watching the NFL, NBA. I grew up a sports fan. I watched Wimbledon. I watched the U.S. Open on TV, but I didn't watch every match and follow players and things like that. So, yeah, I feel like I maybe bring an opinion and a viewpoint of a mainstream sports fan.
But I feel like tennis needs a million of you, and I think you're really instructive as a case study, that you were not a tennis junkie when we first met. You threw yourself into the sport. You got seduced by not just balls going over the net, but by the personalities and the controversies and the fashion.
This is much better than Netflix, I will tell you.
All right, exactly. So, I ask you, and I think you are if I'm the USTA, I'm McKinsey consultant, I'm going to spend a day interviewing you and figuring out how you made this conversion and what appealed to you and what didn't. But were you, was Davis Cup on your radar at all? A, as a casual fan, and B, as you've gotten more into this, where does Davis Cup rank for you?
I think when it comes down to it, and this may sound harsh, but only the Big Four plus a few players can really generate mainstream interest from the typical general sports fan who just enjoys watching competitions and enjoys whatever sport may be in their town or in their country. I think without consistent commitment from those players, Davis Cup was never going to gain the traction of a slam. I mean, everyone in the U.S. who is not a tennis fan will watch Wimbledon, they'll watch the U.S. Open, you know, they'll watch all the slams on TV and they get excited about them. There was never any of that for Davis Cup. And part of that, I think, is because of the regular schedule of that tournament, and then just it didn't make sense. I mean, it's a confusing thing. It's like the slams are for one, very different from a typical sport where you have a season and then a championship at the end. That's like the typical way that a sport works. For tennis, it's like we have four Super Bowls, right? And it's like trying to really get someone, a question I get asked sometimes from people who don't watch tennis is like, which one is most important? It's like, they're all equal, right? And so then they're like, okay, well, what's that fifth thing? It's like for someone who's used to watching a typical sport, I think it's really hard to grasp onto what Davis Cup is, what the value is to a player when you're not seeing the same players there all the time, and how should a fan plan their schedule around something that, like you said, they don't even know where it is. They don't know when it's going to be. It just like kind of pops up on the calendar.
I would say Davis Cup, I mean, tennis is very well suited for this global marketplace that we all play in right now. Davis Cup is particularly ill-suited, where you have irregularity and time zones and an uncertain cast of characters. But let me ask you this. So we all agree Davis Cup we can now say past incarnation wasn't working. Are you watching this event in 2019, and are you watching it for the novelty effect, or does this idea organically draw you in?
I think a little bit of both. I think you have to watch it because it's, you know, year one after this change. But yeah, I think boiling it into the time periods that it is and not making it so sporadic, that from the get-go makes me more interested because I know that there will be a time frame I'm going to watch it in. I think it'll be interesting to see how the players react to it. Labor Cup is an interesting thing to go along with this. I actually would be interested to see what Dave would think about that. I know it's different timing, but it's another thing on the schedule for these players to think about. So I'm watching.
I think you could argue either way on Laver Cup, that on the one hand, this is awfully similar, and this has a history Laver Cup doesn't have, and it has real nation versus nation, and the distinction in Laver Cup of Europe versus the rest of the world is a bit artificial. At some level, the success of Laver Cup, I think, was a real galvanizing force of tennis, and top players really have an appetite for this. So I think it'll be interesting to see how this impacts Laver Cup. What I think is clear is that tennis does not have, and Dave was political as he probably should have been, but tennis does not have the capacity for yet another team competition, this ATP Tennis Australia event, at the beginning of the year. I think Davis Cup is what it is, and they got to the finish line first, and I think this really imperils this ATP Tennis Australia plan. I don't think tennis can accommodate still another team competition. Let's do another one of these. I'm on a vacation next week, but let's do another one of these before the U.S. Open, perhaps, when the draw comes out. I will say this publicly. Great job yesterday.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Well done.
I missed you, though. I was here all by myself in the studio.
You were more than capable.
Hung up the phone and had no one to talk to.
You did a great job. Okay, let's wrap now. Again, big change in tennis. Davis Cup passes. And again, for a sport that does not embrace change particularly lustily, this is big. So let's see how it plays out. All right, Jamie, thanks. If people wanted to get this podcast, remind them where they can go.
They should go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe and leave a review and keep sending some guest suggestions.
Good guest suggestions we've been getting. Okay, that's it for this week. Have a good week, everyone.